All right, welcome to Real Talk, our real estate and local podcast.
Where we get real about real estate. And other like related topics.
Awesome. Well, today we have a special guest joining us, Mr. Stan Olven, a local expert in the Antelope Valley. Stan, how long have you been in the Antelope Valley?
I've been in the Antelope Valley since 1956.
Wow.
That would be a lot of years.
A lot of years.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
That was an Antelope Valley back then?
There wasn't much of one, but there was an Antelope Valley. Yeah.
Right on.
The real estate was here, right?
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
It was here. Awesome. Well, Stan, you are a local business owner, correct?
That's right. I own Sierra Towing.
Sierra Towing.
Started in 1973, while I was in college, actually. And my wife and I took the business over in 1977. So we've got 42 grueling years that we've been running that business. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So one of the great things I know is, like, why is real estate have to do with local business? Well, one of the things that we talk about a lot, especially on here, is real estate agents don't realize that they're running a business. They think they're giving themselves a job, so they don't realize that they're having their local business owners, and that they need to learn from other local business owners. So we really appreciate you coming out, spending some time with us.
Yeah.
This would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, we have a good time.
Should be good. And I've actually had the privilege of knowing you for a little bit.
Known you since, well, you were quite small. Yeah, a grade school kid.
And I've grown a little bit since then.
Slightly larger.
Slightly, a little
Mentally,
bit.
Mentally, I don't know that it's changed a lot here.
About the same. Not much either which way.
He's got wonderfully soft skin, too.
Yeah.
So I hear.
Oh, okay.
So I
change the subject. Quickly.
Yeah.
What's the other
All right, back to the questions here. Well, awesome. So you were going to school back in 73?
So, well, let me tell you, we came to school. When I came to the Antelope Valley, we were in Glendale in that area, and 4 years old. My sister's 3 years older than me, and she was having trouble with all the smog. Smog was, people think that smoggy, that is not smoggy down there at all compared to how it was. It was really, really bad. Yeah. Well, every afternoon in the gap right here, the smog would come in about 2 or 3 o'clock through the gap right here through Palmdale. Every afternoon we'd see it. Actually, near time we would see it. It's calmed down. You never see it that way anymore. It was crazy. Bottom line, the family, we had to get out of that San Gabriel Valley. It was very smoggy. And so mom and dad sold the house and sold everything, and we kind of took off, and we did a summer with a car and a trailer and headed all the way up to Washington and then came all the way back. And in September, this is where we kind of stopped in the Antelope Valley. So that was in 56. And my father was in the automotive end of things, of business. And so we stopped in Quartz Hill, bought a little place on M8, which still have that in the family. And
I've been there.
Yeah.
I rode motorcycles.
Motorcycles.
There as a young
that's
gentleman.
That's right. 5 acres of motorcycles.
I've actually rolled your go-kart. I was in the passenger seat as your son was driving, towing it on a quad.
Too fast.
And we rolled it.
That's right.
It's the first time you've heard about this.
No, they bent the whole thing. It was bent.
There was no hiding it. Our other friend's head was stuck. His helmet was on. Luckily, we're always safe. Uh-huh. His head was stuck in the roll cage. He couldn't get out. He had to take. He's like, I'm stuck.
That's awesome.
Yeah, good time.
So that was in 56. And so my sister was in second grade, and I started out in kindergarten, and that was at Quartz Hill Elementary.
Yeah.
Went all the way through Quartz Hill Elementary in those early years. I was actually a student with in my kindergarten class with Jim Walker, whose father was the famous Joe Walker.
Yeah.
We didn't have a middle school, a junior high school. They shipped us to Del Sur out on 90th and Avenue H back in the day, so that's where we went. And then after that, went to Quartz Hill High School.
Out there.
Yeah, it was all alfalfa fields. Everything was alfalfa fields around here. So
and
then
you were the first graduating class of Quartz Hill High School, right?
Not really.
No.
Not
okay, so really. That was misinformation.
Well, my sister
I'll have
was.
To check with my stack.
My sister was in 1967 was the first actual class.
Okay.
That graduated. They didn't start at Quartz Hill. They started at one of the other high schools. And anyway, so 67 was the first graduating class. Uh-huh. I was class of 70.
Okay. So you were the first when it first came.
Were the first, I believe, that started at site and went all the way through at site.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that counts.
First or second, tomato, tomato. That's pretty Palmdale.
Yeah.
That's pretty Palmdale.
That's
right.
So background for me is I was involved with automotive because my dad had an auto body shop. And so I worked with that and did you know, as a kid would go and work kind of afternoons and that sort of thing after school and all that blue collar stuff. I had all that blue collar stuff as I was going through. However, as I was going through high school and junior high school to high school, I was always good in math and science and that sort of thing. So my goal was to go in through to do engineering.
Awesome.
And that's what I ended up doing. The other thing I did in the summers is I worked on a ranch in Elko. So, and that's in northeastern Nevada. We put up hay. Did that for 4 summers. And so I had a love of agriculture and tractors and that sort of thing. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to go into engineering and I wanted to go into the ag end of it, work for John Deere, New Holland.
Okay.
One of those manufacturing. I wanted to be a troubleshooting engineer that was out in the field.
Yeah.
Found out what was wrong with these tractors and combines and that sort of thing and work on them.
Awesome.
Odd thing happened. Went off to college at University of Nevada, Reno. Went there for 4 years, got my mechanical engineering degree. However, back to the towing industry and so forth. In 1973, my third year, actually almost my fourth year of college, my dad brought on a partner and they expanded our business. And so we had the auto body shop in Palmdale and we had a repair facility and towing in Lancaster with another man that was running that end of it. So that was two sides of the business. The business wasn't planned well. It did not work well. The partnership did not work well. It only worked for about a year.
That's weird that you say that because...
Partnerships are tough.
I don't know of any typical partnerships that seem to work. I think a lot of people get excited to get in partnerships in real estate and other things. And yeah, it seems like a challenge.
It takes rather than just a good friendship and work like that, it takes a lot of paperwork. It takes a good business plan. It takes figuring out what am I good at? What are you good at? We have to work that out and get that all figured out.
Right.
Because and what do you compliment me with? What don't you compliment me with? And where are we short? Where are we short between the two of us? Can you fill in and do that? Oh, you can't do that either? Well, we've got a problem if neither one of us are good in that area that needs to be filled. So that's in business, that's really important. Yeah. And that wasn't looked at properly.
Yeah. Wow.
And so that business fell apart right as I was graduating from college. So here I was with my engineering degree. I had 4 really good job offers. And dad goes, I need help.
Yeah.
I just lost my partner. The business is in the red. This is in, I graduated mid-year, so I went 4.5 years to get my engineering degree. So it was in December of 74, and he goes, I need your help. And so I put the people on hold that I had my interviewing with, and I said, I need to help dad. And I went back for eight months and drove tow truck. So we were the AAA contractor for Lancaster. And if you had a AAA call in Lancaster, you got Stan. Stan was your guy. It was me. So all there during 75, I ran tow truck, ran around all over Lancaster running calls, had a backup guy, and away we went. Oh. So
at what point when you were doing this in 75 or whenever, were you thinking you maybe wanted to continue doing this, or were you always thinking you wanted to go back and follow your original footsteps?
No, I was absolutely planning on going into engineering. That's a tough degree, and it was not easy for me. I worked very hard to get it, and so I was, and it was the big money. As far as I was concerned, I was going to be able to make big money. So went off, worked for those 8 months, and then held off one company, and then went to work for a company called Pittsburgh Des Moines Steel Company, structural steel. So we built big steel buildings. Went off up in Sacramento.
Okay.
So I went off and was doing that. So that would have been August, I think it was, of 75. Yeah, August of 75 when I went off and did that. So abandoned the towing area of it. My dad now had it. We had it together. It was running. He had everything consolidated in Lancaster, and away he went. So I worked as a structural steel engineer for a year in Sacramento and Stockton. Was actually the managed a project in at Delta College in Stockton. We put up a theater about 1.5 times the size of the one at Lancaster. Big theater. Great thing to learn how to do and so forth. And then the company wanted me to learn plate work. And plate work is containment vessels, big steel vessels, tanks, and that sort of thing. And to do that, I was moved to Utah. So they sent me to Provo, Utah. Big change for me, cultural change. Yeah. Everything was a huge change. So was there a year later. So I was in there and made it there for about a year and realized that big business wasn't for me. I did not like large corporate work.
Yeah.
And
was just, it just the like the bureaucracy behind it, or was it just that company, or you just wanted to be your own?
If you've taken the psychology class, the Peter Principle. The Peter Principle states that what will happen is you find there is one place that you will work to that is the optimum that you were good at.
Yeah.
So maybe you know, if you start out and I'm sweeping the floors, good floor sweeper. So the next thing they do is they go, oh, man, you sweep the floors. Now you can actually scrub the floors. So now you scrub the floors, and the next thing you start working up and up and up. And then now pretty soon, well, you know what? You're doing pretty good. We have two more guys working. I'm going to put Adam and Garrett under you.
Yeah.
You're going to have them working for you. Mm. Okay, well, I did pretty well. Now you guys are working for me, and we're doing a pretty good job. We're going through... Well, you know what? Your department's doing so well. We're going to take you up to the next so that you have a person like you. You have five of those working for you.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, now I was fine cleaning, and I was fine with two to five people, but I'm not fine managing managers. I don't know how to do that. I'm not comfortable with that. Peter Principle says, I just reached one level above what I'm good at.
Mm. Wow.
So here I am. I've reached an inefficiency going above. But now the company has taken you to that point, and they're in a tough spot. How do they bring you back down?
Yeah.
How can they bring you back to where you were efficient without you going, boy, I'd love to jump back.
Deflating this person.
Exactly. And how do you do that? How can you do that without losing money? Yeah. And how can they do that without losing faith? I mean, it's a very tough situation.
Yeah. We can't.
You can't. Yeah. And so I saw it running rampant in this business. I was seeing people that were a step above what they could do well.
Yeah.
And so I thought, okay. That will happen to me. Mm. That will definitely happen to me. What would be the ultimate thing that I could finally make in this business? And I thought, okay, I would be a plant manager. I'd be running a plant. And I looked at the guy that was running plants, and I thought, that's one of the worst jobs I've ever seen.
I'm smarter than that guy.
I hate that job. Well, no, it's not that. He was a scapegoat. Everything that went wrong, it was his fault. Scapegoat. No matter what happened, they pointed at him.
Yeah.
So I was switching out and going to a small engineering firm in Reno. And that was where I was headed. And my dad sent me the one and only letter I ever received from my father. And this letter said, I will be selling the business, or I'm willing to give you the towing repair aspect. I'm going to keep the body shop aspect. If you'd like to have that, half of it's yours.
Wow.
And so that's how that happened in 1977. He sent that to me. Wow. And I thought, okay, I'm going to go into a small business, or I can own a small business. Hmm. Now that one that I'm going to go into is not like it's doing really well.
Yeah.
But which should I do? I thought, well, it's really ideal. I've got an engineering degree. I can go into the Antelope Valley. Aeronautical engineering was doing very well here at that time. So I thought, let's give it a shot. I've got a backup plan. I've got an engineering degree. If things don't do well in this automotive trade, I can fall back on my engineering degree. I can go in the aeronautical end of it, and I pretty much can be assured a job.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's going to affect my family, right?
Yeah.
Might be a little bit tough, stress type of thing, but we'll make it through because we have this backup plan.
Yeah.
So that's how it all kind of worked. That's how it all kind of changed and how it went. Yeah.
So I like that because you said you had a backup plan. I think a lot of people when they get into business, like, I'm going to make it work no matter what.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do everything to make it work. And a lot do, and that's great. But having a backup plan is something you fall back on. It is nice.
So what made you? I gotta know. What made you like want to start a bit or run a business versus the security? Like, why? Yeah. Why would you say, okay, I'm gonna go? This is safe, but the risk of this is
right.
Is that where you were evaluating?
Well, you know, and so it's so much about personality. I'm really stubborn. If I and
you can
I
relate to that.
I'm stubborn, and I don't want to fail. I'm very competitive. And, you know, when you start doing something, you just don't want to have a failure. And so it's tough. You get in there and you start pushing and you just don't want to have things come apart. You don't want to fail at what you're doing, right? And I think the educational part of it, so Dad did say one thing to me when I went off to college. I keep talking about Dad. My mom was a huge push, actually. Yeah. On the educational side of it. She was huge push on the educational side. However, my dad, his little 2 cents that he put in, it says, I'll be willing to take care of your college for you and so forth, but you have to have business and management on top of it. So I did a double degree. I did general mechanical engineering and I did engineering management. So I had business college classes that I took as well.
Right.
And those are really what helped save me, I think, as I came into this business. as I was going through it, because I had some background and I knew what needed to happen educational wise. I knew what was going on. You know, I'd also been working since I was 16. I'd always worked in some sort of a business, so I was very familiar with blue collar blue collar work, and knew what needed to be done in order to make a business get pushed through.
That's missing in our generation. Like, blue collar work.
there is some of that missing.
There is still a lot of people out there making a lot of money in blue collar work, and that's a great opportunity nowadays.
Bad, isn't it, Garrett? That right now that people don't realize, you know, if you hear Mike Rowe, I think his name is Dirty Jobs.
Oh yeah.
If you listen to him, and you'll see the opportunities that are out there for young people.
It's phenomenal.
To be a plumber. Oh, I don't want to be a plumber. I don't want to be an electrician. Really?
Yeah.
You want to make six figures within the next few years?
Yep.
Really?
And you don't want to do that? Have a paid internship while you're learning?
Yeah.
And with people dying to hire you and to be able to have time, the opportunities
the
that you have?
The pendulum swung so much. It was all about go to college.
Right.
So everyone went to college. And now, well, what about all these trades that we still need?
Right.
And I totally agree with that.
Well, and I got to tell you, here's one other thing that I love about my business, and I'm proud about my business, and my background is I love blue collar. Mm. You know, white collar is one of those things that you come out and you think that's the elite, right?
Yeah.
Let me tell you something. Mm. Blue collar is what our teams are based upon. Baseball teams, hockey teams. That is a blue collar environment. And you walk into the room, which there's kind of a pecking level and so forth like that happens in there, right? Who's captain of the team? Where are you in all of that? We know that. Those of us that played team sports, we know how that works.
Right.
I don't care what anybody says. That's how it is in blue collar. Mm-hmm. It is that way when you walk in a room, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that at all. And if you can figure out how you fit into the team, which part of the team am I?
Yeah. Right.
And let me get in the middle of being that team player and do it. And it's a great way to go. I'm sorry that we aren't pushing that in school right now. I'm really sorry.
I agree with that. I think the pendulum's going to swing back a little bit that way.
I hope so.
The money gets there and you realize you get a paid internship in 3 years, be making six figures, like you said, compared to still paying off your student loans and making $60,000-$70,000 a year with
instability.
Yes.
Right? With instability.
Yeah.
And I don't think in that blue collar there doesn't appear to be the instability, because we don't have the people doing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
So I want to go back to the time where you started your business and you made the decision. The security is there, but the reward of this risk, I mean, what I'm hearing you say is like the reward of this could be bigger than the security. What kind of problems did you initially counter when you decided to be a business-minded person and run that business?
So there's a lot of facets to your question, I think, that come to mind when you say
That's a big question.
And I'm not even sure I'm going to answer your question properly, but let me just say what went through my mind as you were saying that.
That works too.
Make it work.
Came in and there was a lot of employees there. And as we had all of these employees, they weren't my kind of guys.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So once again, let's talk about teams again. If you come into a team and your team isn't the right team and they ain't your guys, it's going to be tough.
Yeah.
My father hired differently than I do. I've got to be around people that I enjoy being around. I've got to be around people that I have a lot of respect for. And you know, Dad, World War II guy, you know, I was like, you're in, you're out.
Right.
You know, it's a different type of thought.
Certainly.
With employees and so forth. Mine were, I'm not friends and buddies with my employees, but they could all be. Yeah. Let's put it that way. They've got to have that feel around me. So that was a major thing that I had to do when I first got there, is I had to switch the whole feel.
The culture.
The absolute culture, the team. I had to have the right team when I came in there. So I had to deal with that aspect of it. And then, of course, I'm dealing with the financial and all that aspect of it.
Yeah.
And something bizarre happened that saved my bacon. My dad was very unusual. My dad was, stands here.
I'm good now.
Backed off and went and did his stuff. And here you go, bud. Take it away. Go, is what he said to me, basically. And so I did. I'm one of those guys. I step in and away we go. Well, I had a lot on my plate. I had a lot on my plate that was going on, because I'm doing AAA towing. I'm AAA contractor for Lancaster. And we were one of the major auto repair facilities in Lancaster, if not the major. Mm. And so we were going 100 miles an hour. And one day, well, my wife and I were up skiing, and unfortunately, she got fell on a Scotties and slid down Scotties, and she broke her leg. We hadn't been
Mammoth
married.
Mammoth Mountain.
Mammoth Mountain.
Yeah.
We hadn't been married a year. And so I remember my mom and dad went off someplace, and I had a lot of stuff to do at the shop, and I'm just going, oh, no. By the way, she was going to go into real estate, and she was taking classes and so forth. Broke her leg, had to put that all on hold, right? And I had a lot on my plate. My folks had gone off, so I had to do payroll. And I remember calling Chris up, and I said, Chris, I am buried. Can you come down? She had an accounting classes. And could you come down and give me a hand, do some payroll? She came in, and one of the employees, one of my father's past employees, there was some disagreement. And he got mad and said, well, I'm done with this family affair thing. And he kind of walked off. And I go, wasn't that great? You came in here and you fired somebody already. She goes, I didn't fire anybody. I go, well, I don't know. We'll see. Bottom line, she came in, and she has been the backbone of the business when it comes to financials and all that aspect of it. Absolute backbone. Yeah. I couldn't have done it without her. Yeah. I could not have done it. And we work as a team. We are around each other working every day, all day long. And that's the reason that business is so successful, is because here was this team that worked, my wife and I. And so there we are, captain and co-captain, or how you're. And I'm not sure she might have been the captain. I'm not sure.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I'm not about to say.
Yeah, right. We all know what the truth is. Let's be honest.
It was quite equal.
Good answer.
Bottom line, we were able to get through a lot of those things that can be very tough when you get home at night and try to figure things out. I don't like to go through the tough days. I don't like to hash it out afterwards. I come home and it's done. I don't want to talk about it anymore. Done, done, done. And so that's very hard on a spouse. When you come home and you've had a hard day and you're not going to talk about it, well, she already knew. Yeah. She already knew the day.
Yeah.
She already knew I was being quiet. I wasn't quiet because I was upset with her. I was quiet because I'm in just general beat, upset, and she understood that.
Mm.
That was key. Key to our relationship, key to the business. Awesome. We could take care of that. So there was aspects of this business that worked that worked very nicely, right, even though we didn't really have it worked out that way. It happened. It happened
now,
that way.
Now, when you took over, were you profitable right away? Were you
not at all.
So what was the steps for you?
So a huge step that came through with this. So with businesses, what it takes is, what's the next step that's going to happen, right?
Yeah.
What leads up, what makes it? We were running a lot of auto club call. AAA is made to be not for profit, okay? AAA is made to be break even.
Yeah.
So when we do AAA, when AAA calls are being run, I haven't been a AAA contractor for 13 years now, but AAA contractor, you are not making money. You're making the payments on your truck. You're making your insurance payments. You're making your employees' payments, but you're not making a dime. Yeah. You're probably not even making money for yourself. Mm. Okay. So you're just breaking even as you go. Anything else you do make. Now all your overhead's been taken care of, right?
Right.
So your overhead's taken care of. Now, if I do another tow,
that's profit.
That's profitability tow. If you had a repair station and bring somebody in to repair a car, you have some profitability with that. Okay. So that's the way that all ran. We did it like that, and we're just going along, and you're just running, just breaking even, just going along for probably about, I'm going to say 3 to 5 years.
Wow. 3 to 5 years.
Yeah. Somewhere. So 77 to early 80, about 80, 81, I guess it was either 80 or 81. And at that point, the sheriffs were in dire need of another contractor. They were having a problem with another tow company, and they actually came to me. they came to me and actually asked if I'd be interested or not. And I said, well, yeah, sure. Let me see. And that was the huge change.
Awesome.
Do
you know why they came to you? Was that someone that you, they just came to you, or
it was
relationship,
because, it was because of my relationship with AAA. We would do anything we could for AAA and for the Antelope Valley, for people.
Good reputation.
Reputation was huge. No matter what happened, if something went wrong, we'd take care of it. I don't care what it was.
Yeah. Even if it was a loss, you would take care of it.
You take care of any problem. If something happened.
Real estate agents.
Yeah.
Do the right thing. Take care of your clients.
Well, so I always tell people, where do I get my car fixed? If you're going to get your vehicle fixed, where do I go? You go to a family owned, a small operation. Why do you do that? Well, if I go in there, if you come into my shop and you're upset with me, I didn't do something right, what's the first thing you're going to do? You're going to go home. You're going to tell your wife. Yeah. What's your wife going to do? She's going to tell her friend. What are you going to do when you go to your business?
15 of her friends.
You're going to tell your friend. On and on and on. So you have an immediate 10 to 15 to 25 people that know that business did you wrong.
Yikes.
So it's the worst that can happen. Yeah. Now, why do we say you go to a mom and pop? That'll break you in the first 5 years of your business. It'll break you. So you have to take care of everybody. Once you have a buildup of customers, it'll still break you. It's amazing how fast it'll take you down. Yeah. So you have to
absolutely
that personal thing. What did they do? It's exactly the same with you guys, you know, right?
Yeah. So, it's 100%.
Agents don't get that. They don't understand that the relationship with their client, that's everything. And they're scared to make it right for a $200. And you're like, you don't realize the damage you'll do by not making it right.
Making a point. Yeah. I'm going to show them. I'm going to make a point. So you know what? The point you just made is sunk yourself.
Yeah.
So we would have customers that came in and, oh, yeah, my car's got a scratch underneath or here or there. And so I would go, oh, really? Let's bring that thing. And I'd bring it in and I'd put it on a lift and I'd pick it up and I'd go, which scratch is that we're talking about? This one or that one or this one or that one or this one? And we'd go around and they'd realize, oh, wait a minute. And I'd go, you know, I'm here to help you, honestly, but take a look. Let's look here. And then I'd load the car again and show them how – is it possible? How could you do it? Would there be one? Yeah. Education. Yeah. All you have to do is educate somebody.
Without slamming them down, you're wrong.
Yeah. Absolutely. You go the other way.
Right.
Go the other way. Let me just tell you where we're at and what we can possibly have. When you can tell somebody and educate somebody without attitude, because they're going to attitude you to death.
Yeah, of course.
You go the other way. You unattitude, man. You go back off of it and just go, let's see. Okay, maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. I don't know. You know?
Right.
And
then, diffuse them that way.
Absolutely. And then you come in and then they go, okay, well, what do we need? What do we got to do here? What's this going to take? What do we got to do? Hmm. And now there are people out there who will take advantage of you.
Yeah.
And I've got to admit,
most people are good, though.
But I've got to admit to you, I'm 66. I'm almost 67. When I was in my mid-50s, I was keeping – we were AAA contractor, running 2,000 calls a month in Lancaster. We were running a lot of calls.
Yeah.
In round numbers during the week, it was almost 100 calls a day.
Yeah.
A lot of calls. If you could keep your complaints down to 1%.
Yeah. Doing pretty good.
Not really. That's one person a day that's mad at you. Every day, you get a person mad at you. So take it down to 0.5%. Every other day, somebody's mad at you. Well, what's that?
Yeah.
So you're good at that.
180 people a year.
So you're good at that until you hit about your mid-50s. Mm. And then finally you just go, because we'd take care of everything. Yeah. I don't care what. We'd take care of it. But finally, after a while, it just the public just gets to you.
Yeah.
And I just kind of went, oh, King's X, man. So I dropped the auto club contract. I just said, I can't do that anymore. And I've been I was a sheriff contractor and have been. I was the contractor for the sheriffs. And this is back to your question. What made the big difference? I went and contracted with the sheriffs and narrowed down my field so my trucks weren't running over 100,000 miles per truck per year. And now my trucks run in the 20,000 mile range per truck per year. And
that's good.
Yeah, and the profitability is better. The guys don't have to work as hard. It's just that it takes years and years and years to get to that level, to get to the level where you can do something and do it differently.
So let's circle back to that real quick, because you just said a key word that I think a lot of agents miss is your profitability was better even though you were doing less.
And that was bizarre. I couldn't believe it. I could not believe when we got rid of and I didn't knock out a bunch of drivers. I was about to put on two more tow trucks and two more drivers. It actually worked where I was able to keep everybody I had for 1 year, and I warned everybody. I said, I will keep everyone for a year. I'll have everybody. But at some point, I've got to slim this down. And I had a couple guys head out and so forth. Yeah. The bottom line did not change.
Wow.
Profitability did not change.
Wow.
Now,
you knew your numbers there. So you knew, as your business was running, you knew what your profitability, what was costing, what your expenses were. And so you knew when you cut those expenses and you obviously were going to cut your profits, you could keep the bottom line the same.
Exactly. Yeah. It's the same old deal when you're selling something and you mark it up 1%, you know, and so you're making a penny on each one.
Yeah.
And so how many pennies do I have to make in order to make it? Or can I sell one item for $1? Yeah. And so that's 100, one of those 1 penny items. It's the same thing with towing. I was doing all these tows. But what it was doing was providing jobs. Now, that was fine.
Yeah.
Providing jobs is a good thing, and that's a noble thing to do.
Yeah, certainly.
And I felt very good about that. The problem was, and I kept telling the guys, I got to tell you guys, when we get to the point where this is working harder on me, and when I'm having to work too hard because you guys aren't doing it or people are upset or something, I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it anymore. Well, the other side that happened too is I just got older. I didn't have.
Well, and you were in the position. So as you started to make more profit in your business, and you the first 5 years, you said you didn't make any, but then you started to make profit.
Because of the contract, I had an additional contract that I got because of reputation.
Yep. And off your reputation, you had a good standing within in the NL Valley. People know who you are. Now, I kind of want to circle back to this point. Now, there's a lot of people that still have to work five times as hard past your age because they didn't set themselves to not have to work so hard. So you've said something, you don't have to work as hard now. Obviously, financially, you're not stressed about making those payments and stuff like that. So in your business, what else did you do besides your business to help get you to that point? So now you don't have to be as stressed. So does that make sense?
Maybe I'm not going to answer your question directly, but let me answer the part of it that I think was a huge difference in my life. And it happened in the mid 80s when Ronald Reagan came in. He gave huge tax breaks for buying items.
Yeah.
And so that was right when the toy industry changed. We changed to flatbeds and we changed to wheel lifts from these straps that we towed with. I had to change my entire industry and buy a bunch of new trucks. Mm. I had to go heavily in debt. However, I was getting this tax incentive, so I was willing to do it.
Yeah.
What happened, though, that debt was, it really ate on me. Mm. We did a location change, a business location change, bought property, had all these trucks that I had to purchase, had a lot of debt. And, you know, that eats at you. It ate at me for another 3 to 5 years. Mm. That was eating away. So here we went into a more profitable contract on top of the auto club. And then I had to do all this kind of stuff. Mm. And I swore, I said, you know what? That's it. I will not do that again. I will never do that again. I will never go where I go in debt like this. Mm. Had to do it at that time, but I said, done.
Yeah.
And I didn't. I've never done it since. I go through, and if I can buy something, maybe not the wisest thing financially, you've got to figure out what you do.
Yeah.
And something I do well is I sleep well when I'm not worried.
Yeah.
And if I'm worried, I can't sleep. And if I can't sleep, I can't produce. And I can't produce, we don't have a business. So figure out what bothers you. Mm. And you've got to take that off your plate.
Mm.
And if you have a lot of debt, you know, sleep well at night, you could fail your business.
Yeah.
So understand. Now, some people work well with debt.
Yeah.
You know, they'll go out and they'll get tow trucks and they'll have a whole bunch of them and they'll have payments on all of them. I couldn't do that. I just couldn't say I've got, you know, here's $250,000 worth of tow truck debt sitting out there.
Yeah.
I'll be fine.
And you're lying to yourself by not including that as part of your debt, right?
I'm the guy that always worry about what would happen if you're inside a cave. I'm always the guy that goes, what would happen when an earthquake? The one time the earthquake's going to hit was when I'm inside the cave.
Right.
So I'm the guy that's always going, I own all this money on the what happens if I lose that one contract? Well, you're doing a great job on that contract. Why would you? I don't know
what happens if I do.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Absolutely.
So I don't want to have that debt because I don't work well with that type of feeling.
Awesome. So you paid off, you went through and you paid off your
paid
debt.
That off, and I never did that again. And that kicked in gear something where we always were able to stay ahead, always stay ahead.
Leading with revenue or leading with profit.
Yeah, and we were always, so you've always got to have this money sitting back here so that when things do slow down, and my business slows down, I'm a political business now because things change with politics and towing. When you tow for the sheriff's department. So depending on who the captain is and so forth, it depends on how many tows are on that kind of thing. So it changes.
Things you don't think about. So,
it absolutely does. It absolutely does. So what we have to do is what do you do when the money changes? Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes Chris and I don't take a paycheck. Sometimes we just can't for a while. We'll sit. The key is you keep your employees, you keep those employees always. They're golden. They know everything's golden. You keep your equipment up. When you have any profitability, that goes back into the business. You keep all of the stuff that people are using and everything, you get that to the highest standards you can so that your employees want to stay there. They have the best equipment.
Yeah.
They have the best facility that they're at. And they should have the best management.
Yeah,
so absolutely. You want to have all of that. It's certainly in the same business
you
have here.
When your employees feel good about where you're working, how he's working, they produce better. If there's stress on, is this going to happen? Is it going to close in? I didn't get my paycheck.
Is my check going to bounce?
Yeah, that is not an environment to have productivity.
Certainly not.
I mean, that's just any business common sense.
Absolutely.
You know something else I keep hearing is like some fundamentals action going on. You're saying when you started your business, you realized I am not the guy that should be running payroll. You identified that, yep. And then immediately
found
somebody to replace it. And so right. I
leveraged what you're not good
leveraged.
At.
Yeah.
So a lot of agents, I know myself, I know I'm not good at paperwork. And if I want to do a great job for my clients, I've always put somebody else on it. And look, it makes me look like a rock star when things don't go wrong.
Well, your attitude's right then, right? Your attitude's right. If your attitude's wrong because you go, I got to go do that paperwork, and I don't want to do that paperwork, is that attitude going to go over to your next?
No.
See, you got to be very careful. Are you carrying over a bad attitude because of something that just isn't working well for you? Right. So you've got to figure out those weaknesses in your personality, and you've got to be able to admit it.
Yes.
You can't do it all.
Yes.
Are you kidding? No. We're
you can't grow. To me, you stop. You limit yourself if you're unaware of it. We're only capable of so much, which is a lot. But we're so entrepreneurial minds sometimes are focused on being good at everything rather than just being good at one thing.
Right.
Like really, really, really good at it.
Well, competitive. Right, you're competitive with everything, and do you want to show?
Yeah.
Oh, so you failed at that?
Right.
You failed
exactly.
at that. Really?
You can't do paperwork.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Like,
can't
what's wrong with you?
I have a rock star paperworker.
Absolutely, and that's what we need to admit to, and then find that person to fill that position, and then you go. You are a rock star.
Right.
And that person that did it for you, they feel good too because they have a position. They did something that helped you help the whole business. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, then let's. So you've been doing this now for a while, and now looking back at starting over, someone that was to start over in business. I know you give back to a lot of the community. You help out with the youth
Rotary and
Rotary, everything.
I do everything,
well, which is awesome.
Never seen you at Snookies, though.
That's good.
That's good. I've actually never been in there, just for the record.
However, we do tow out of there. So.
What advice would you give?
You'll see one of these people that are driving like crazy and something. You go, I can't believe that person's crazy driving. That's horrible. And I'll go, that's what keeps us in business.
That's true. So keep driving that way.
We'll come pick you up later. In a way like that, places like, you know, whatever.
Yeah, Snookies,
there's some places like
scooters,
those.
Too.
Yeah. Those attract some people that probably are going to get towed.
That's a $300 night right there.
There you go. Sorry, bud. Sorry, where were we at?
No,
just looking back at, you know, your years of experience running a business. So there's a lot of people, businesses online, everything. What advice would you give someone that's looking to get to do a small business now? If you could go back and talk to yourself, you know, back in 76, what would you give?
So there's a couple of sides to this. I think number one, and you always hear this, do what you want to do and like to do.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's a caveat to that, because did I really want to go back in the automotive? That was not my key thing to do. It was not. So when I got into that, but I was good at it. I was good, and I knew I was good at it, and I knew how to do repairs, and that engineering thing really kicked in when I was doing repairs and so forth. So that side of it, you've got to do something that you know that you're good at. You've got to know that you have that ability and that you're very good at, that you know how. And then what are you bad at? Mm-hmm. Let's don't go ahead in that direction, okay?
No, don't.
Let's figure out where that part is. And so, okay, what am I good at? What am I bad at? So did I analyze those things when I did it? I really didn't. I wasn't really looking closely at that. Mm-hmm. But I got to tell you, what was happening to me in the engineering field that I found was really frustrating me is I'm a finish it kind of guy. When I start something, I need to finish it. Mm-hmm. Engineering, what tends to happen, especially with big business, you're in one department.
Yeah.
So you might be in the engineering. You might be engineering and engineering something, and that thing eventually gets built a year
or two,
or whatever.
A small portion of a wing on a plane, and you never see the plane get finished.
That's right. Yeah. But I'm the guy that I need to engineer, and then I need to build it and weld
it
and put it together, and then I need to paint it, and then I need to fly it.
And
guess what? In agriculture and in the tow industry, that's exactly what I do. When one of the tow trucks breaks, I fix it. And I used to always, with pride, we'd say, if that's a brand new tow truck and something goes wrong with it, it doesn't go back to the dealer. Mm. We would not take those things back to the dealer. We'd have to take it back down the hill to go to the dealer. We'd lose the truck for 2 or 3 days. It's like, no way. We fix it. We would fix it. We'd find out what was wrong, fix it better than it was.
Yeah.
Design it, figure out what went wrong, and fix it better than it was. Well, that was fun. That was a kick.
Yeah.
I loved that. So I got to do kind of that engineering aspect, didn't I?
Yeah.
I got to do that.
You found what you loved in what you did, and you made it. That's awesome.
Yeah. And the other thing I found,
I hate that. Oh, real quick, I hate the, you know, don't do it unless you love it. Like, there's advice it gives to kids a day.
What happens if you and don't like, know you don't know?
Yeah, you don't know until you do things.
Well, do you love work? Yeah. I don't know if any of us love work. Do you love going and working?
Yeah.
Actually, you should be able to. Yeah. My problem with engineering, the other fun thing I found is I love to ski. You know, I love to ski. I was in Utah, and I'm sitting behind a desk, and I'd look outside, and it would be snowing, and I'd see a foot and a half of snow on the ground, and I'm going, I'm stuck behind this desk. Are you kidding me? This is crazy. I can't go out there and, you know, I can't do anything about that. I need more flexibility. Yeah. I need to have, or I need to get away from the snow so that doesn't matter. So I knew that I needed to be actually out in it. And I found with the towing industry, I was out in it. I could actually go out and I was doing something. I was working and I could jump on and I'd drive the truck and that would make me relax. If I had a tough day, I'm having a really tough day. Give me a tow.
Yeah.
I'd jump in the truck and off I'd go. That would relax me and take me completely out of the whole thing. And then I could come back, new attitude. Those are just things you've got to look at in business.
Yeah.
What is it that's stressing you? Do you have any way of getting out of it? Do you have any way of what's your release? What's your outlet?
Yeah.
You know? And if you don't have one. Yeah. Is it all money? Is it all money?
Right.
Then you got it wrong.
Yeah,
if you
check
got it all
yourself.
Money, yeah, there's something wrong.
Yeah.
It is not. My wife and I have never been in that situation. We go, oh, we got a ton of. No, it's kind of the opposite. It's kind of like, you know what? Let's have what's nice to have. Yeah. I don't need anything. Yeah. We're living the same house we've had since 1979. Yeah. You know, it's like, I'm good. You have to look at this stuff differently.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to make it so you feel whole when it's all said and done.
Well, in business, in my opinion, is to build a life by design. That we get stuck in running a business and forget, like, why am I doing this? Was I born to do business? No, I think the difference is your business helping you build a life with purpose and design.
Well, isn't it the best if you could go to a client and you talk to the client and you go, what a cool guy. I really like those two. That was really fun. Maybe we can do business as well. But if the primary thing was, those were really good people.
Right.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
And I think I love that aspect of our business. We have a lot of times people come in a stress situation. Their car's been in a wreck or this or that.
Right.
And they're in a stress situation. And we need to identify that. Maybe there's been some sort of a crime that's been committed and we've towed the vehicle. Mm-hmm. But you know what? There's parents or somebody coming in. They're stressed.
Yeah.
And you know, you don't judge anybody when they come through that door. You have no idea. You don't know what's going on. So you just lay back and let it and go with it. But the point being is, those people that are coming in need help. The people that are coming here need help. They expect and want to be able to socialize and have help. Mm. They don't just want to buy a house. That might be what they think, but they actually want, when I go to get something, I need to have somebody on my side that's going, here's what I can do to give you a hand. Yeah. You know,
you don't want those agents that have that stinky commission breath.
Well,
you want those agents
finish
that
it,
are...
Finish it, let's cut this off. Yeah, like, oh, yeah. Lower the price, lower
it's
the
like,
price.
You know, wow, yeah, you got some stinky commission breath. You need to back off with that commission breath.
I had
to be my fiduciary responsibility and help me through this process.
Exactly.
Sometimes my breath was too minty because I'd be like, hey, you guys don't want to buy this house. Yeah. This house sucks. Yeah. Let's go to the next one. Wait, maybe I shouldn't say that.
You should say that. Yeah. That's exactly what you should say.
Right. Yeah, because if they don't buy it this time, you'll have a client for life.
But then they trust
and they'll refer you in the future.
Absolutely. That's what you want, right?
Yeah.
That's what we want. Look at the big picture.
Yeah.
You got to look at the big picture.
Absolutely.
That's all there is.
Well, we got to kind of cut this because we'll go to forever, and I know, but we really appreciate you coming out and giving us a little bit of insight because so many things of what you said, it's just so much is what real estate agents struggle with every day.
Yeah.
And it's because it's a business. It's a business. It's not a job. Yeah. You give yourself a job. You're not doing it right. You're building yourself a business. So thank you, Stan. We appreciate your time. It was fun.
Yeah. Really fun.
Yeah. So we appreciate it. So that's it for today. Anything else from you?
But I'm going to leave it at that.
Okay. Yeah. We'll cut it. Well, thanks, guys. We'll see you guys next time.
Bye.